Hey Scott, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, there's something's wrong on our end that we can't figure out. So we're gonna go ahead and record it and then send it out to people and explain what happened. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Okay. All right. So, okay. Give us like 2 seconds.
Okay.
All right, Frank. We're going to go ahead and record the webinar, and then we're going to send it out to everybody after the fact.
Okay. I'm just trying to.
Okay. Now people are logging in. Okay. All right. We'll
Hey, this is Michael at Texas State Affordable Housing Corporation. I apologize. We had some technical difficulties, but now it looks like our attendees are showing up, which it wasn't showing up several minutes ago. So I really apologize for the delay. We're going to go ahead and jump right into it, though, because it's already 10 past 12. I'm joined by Sarah Eleanor in our office, and she's briefly going to tell you about Housing Connection in general, and then I'll introduce our guest today, Scott Caldwell.
All right. Hi, everybody. Again, thank you for your patience, and we apologize for the technical difficulties. We did recently get a new webinar system, so this is only our second webinar that we've hosted on this new system, so our apologies. But again, as Sarah Eleanor here, I probably know many of you that are on the call, but I did want to do a brief introduction to say that this webinar is a part of our new Housing Connection network. We will do a series of webinars every quarter throughout the year, and two will be focused on housing counseling and helping you further that mission, and then two will be focused on helping you build capacity, whether that be, you know, for your housing counseling programs or perhaps affordable housing development programs that your organization might take part in. So this one in particular, Michael will be giving you a brief description of the webinar itself, and then our presenter, who is in Amarillo today. So thank you again for being on the call, and we appreciate you guys' patience again.
This is Michael again. I'm pleased to be joined by Scott Caldwell to do this webinar on understanding special project campaigns and how to create fundraising success. I'm personally excited because Scott's from my hometown of Amarillo. Well, he lives in my hometown of Amarillo. I don't know if he is from there as well. But he's with the Caldwell Business Group, and their company works specifically with nonprofit organizations to help them accomplish goals through support and strategy. They're specialists in re-energizing organizations and helping them to establish the core elements to win. Throughout his career, Scott has specialized in working with small businesses, municipalities, and small to mid-sized nonprofits to facilitate the establishment of frameworks and systems within their organizational structure to ensure effective management, development, and growth. Mr. Caldwell holds a Master's of Business Administration and a Bachelor's in Business Administration with an emphasis in management. A couple of administrative things. If you have questions, feel free to put them in the Q&A box and I'll interrupt Scott, but otherwise you won't hear from me again. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Caldwell. Thanks again, Scott.
Hey, thank you. And yeah, just for clarification, I've been in Amarillo for about 13 years now. So I came here one time and I met my wife, and so the rest is history, but it's a great community. So, hey, I'm so glad to be on this webinar today with everyone. And I'm looking forward to sharing the information a little bit more about CBG, my company. We're founded back in 2010. I define us as a management consulting firm, and we specialize in the nonprofit industry. And so we do a lot of strategic organizational development, fundraising for special initiatives, such as capital campaigns, special projects. We also do a lot of capacity building work in that fundraising vein, a lot of training, and we do a little bit of executive recruiting here and there. So that's the Reader's Digest version of who we are. So I'll share some information of how y'all can find out more about us later on. But today I want to talk about special project campaigns and how to create fundraising success. And so the only way I know how to talk about anything or share any kind of information is to really just go off of what we're used to doing. And so what I'm going to share with you today is how we typically work with organizations and what we have found to be successful and mistakes we've seen some organizations make. So with that being said, I do want to throw out a disclaimer. You know, it's hard to understand who your audience is going to be typically when you're doing a training like this. So I try to keep things at a higher level. So there may be some areas where you want me to be a little bit more granular. That's fine. Feel free to throw in a question, as Michael stated earlier, you can make contact with us later. So to start off with, you're in the right place if you have a special project that requires you to raise financial resources. And that's possibly in your future, or you are currently in a campaign, and may be stuck. You're in the right place if you've raised grant dollars and need additional financial resources to finalize your project. Hopefully this training can help you enhance major gifts to a specific effort, as well as help you get staff and board and your board on track for a special initiative. So what you'll discover today, we're going to go over five primary points. And so number one, we're going to talk about the unique characteristics of a campaign, typical mistakes, some prerequisites for special project fundraising success, effective planning, as well as typical roles and responsibilities in a campaign. Yeah, I forgot to mention also, the slides that I have, they may be kind of, they're going to be a little wordy. I do that on purpose because I will share the slide deck out. So if I'm going through this a little bit faster than you can write notes, don't kill yourself trying to take notes. I'm going to be forwarding the slide deck out to Michael and Sarah, and so they can get it out to you. So just FYI there. So the big picture, what is a special project campaign? Well, first of all, it's interchangeable with the term capital campaign. I like the word special project campaign because I think some people can box in when you to their own definition when you say the word capital campaign. But the systems and the techniques and strategies that I'm going to share with you today could be used for any kind of special project, even if it's not a capital focused project. It could be a special project that you have, maybe a program or something that you're trying to get off ground that you need to raise money for. And so, but a special project campaign, so the formal definition that as we define it, it's an intensive organized fundraising effort for specific capital needs or projects executed within a specific time period, usually over one or more years. And so it's a well-defined, well-planned, and organized effort to raise money, in short. So with this, there has to be a very strategic and systematic focus and approach when implementing an effective campaign. And that's important because the negative results from a failed campaign can be devastating to an organization. It can ruin your reputation, relationships with donors, and the overall health of your organization. So you want to be sure that as you approach a project like this, that you have full confidence and you have done your homework beforehand, and you have good plans in place to make sure that you are going to be successful in your effort. So unique characteristics of a campaign. This is what makes it different than typical fundraising. A lot of times when I say the term fundraising, people immediately think events. We're going to do an event. We're going to host an event and raise a bunch of money. But typically what, or think of something else, but usually what they'll think of is something that is very external. You're going out and you're telling the masses, you're trying to gather as many people around as you can to raise as much money. Well, what makes a campaign, a special projects campaign, different is that we do it opposite of that. It's more inside out. So all fundraising starts with family, board, faculty, staff, and others close to the organization first. And then you confirm insider support of the organization before you go external. And so what that means, it's all internal. And so what you're doing is you're engaging your family first. You're engaging people who have a linkage to your organization who you think can give a substantial amount of money. And so capital campaign is also top down. So the way that we do is we try to engage and collect and get pledges for the largest gifts first, because we feel that lead gifts set the standard for the whole campaign. And I'll explain this on this next slide. But the other thing that's unique to a campaign is we use matching gifts or challenge gifts as a strategy to enhance fundraising potential and ensure the success of the campaign. So we love doing stuff like that. But again, top down, in a typical campaign, 90% of the gifts that we experience come from 10% of the donors. And so that's why we want to start with them first. We want to try to raise as much funds as we can before we go and we tell the masses. And I'll explain that a little bit more here as we go through the typical mistakes that organizations can make in a special projects campaign. So again, starting, they cast a wide net first. So going back to what I was saying, you know, when I say the word fundraising, people typically think external. Let's get it in the newspaper. Let's tell everybody we can. Let's try to raise all the money we can. As I mentioned, a capital campaign, a special projects campaign is different from the perspective of that we stay internal first. So reality behind this is that, you will be unsuccessful in gaining support unless you have established significant momentum. And so what I mean by that is that, you know, if you have a campaign and you say you're trying to raise, let's just say $1 million. If somebody came up to me and they said, "Hey man, we're trying to raise $1 million and we need your help." And I ask them, "Well, how much have you raised so far?" And they tell me, "Well, we've got 100,000 in." Well, that's still $900,000 left to be raised. I don't know about you, but for me, that's intimidating. That's a lot of money to me. And so I can't wrap my brain around how I could even be a part of that. So it's likely I probably wouldn't even give to that, because I just feel like whatever I do give would not make a difference, because there's so much ground to cover. Whereas if somebody came to me and it was flipped and they said, "Hey, you know, we have $1 million campaign. We've already raised 900,000. We just need help from a few donors to wrap this campaign up." Now, $100,000 is still a lot of money to me. Don't get me wrong, but I can wrap my mind around how, you know, maybe a small gift from me can help contribute to the overall success of the campaign. So, again, you'll be unsuccessful in gaining support unless you have established significant momentum. And so that's why we preach staying internal and raising funds before you are external and shouting out to the masses. And so how to avoid this mistake? Again, begin with family first. We start every campaign by securing 100% support from the board. We also give staff and all volunteers the opportunity to give a gift as well. We don't feel like we can go out and ask anybody for money until we can say with a straight face, honestly, that our board is completely bought in and we have skin in the game. So I just don't feel it's right to ask anybody else for money if your own organization isn't willing to invest first. Take an inventory. And so what this means is to look back at your organization and find those donors who you think have the capacity to give a significant level, and who have an existing linkage or a relationship with you, and engage them first. Establish linkages. So use internal networks. That's through your board, staff, volunteer contacts to determine additional donors who may have capacity to give. So not only are you looking at donors who have given in the past, who you already have a relationship with, but you're looking for new people who you think would have an interest in your organization and may have a personal internal network linkage to people who are already involved with your organization and who may could give at a significant level. The last is go big first.
work to gain the largest gifts first before casting your net out. Mistake number two, we find that a lot of organizations really fail to realize the necessary commitment. Again, I've run into a lot of organizations that think that they're going to raise $5 million by throwing an ad in the newspaper and the money's just going to start rolling in and it's going to be great. If y'all know an organization that has done that, please let me know because I'd love to visit with them because I've never experienced it myself. So organizations often underestimate the commitment necessary to effectively manage a campaign. So the reality of this, key staff, that means executive directors, development personnel, managing the campaign. You should expect to spend a minimum of 10 to 20 hours per month toward campaign efforts when you are implementing a campaign. And this is if you hire outside help to assist with campaign efforts. And what I mean by that is if you've hired a consultant to help you manage the campaign. If you're doing it all on your own, you could probably easily double that amount to 20 to 40 hours a month. It would be your expectation on top of what you're already doing daily. So how to avoid this? Spend time planning out the efforts with key objectives, strategies, and responsibilities. Do not be impatient and begin before you're ready. The key is to be very strategic and make sure you have a good, solid plan in place that guides you through the process of how you're going to raise those funds. A part of that plan is to develop strength in numbers. So the first thing that we do when we come in and we're working with an organization to raise a significant amount of money for a special project campaign is we establish a committee. And it's typically comprised of board members, staff, volunteers, even some donors who we know would be passionate about this and who we know are going to be able to help and provide that human capital, that manpower that we need to get this project moving forward and to be successful in it. Mistake number three, this is a big one. We often find that people are very unrealistic. In Amarillo, Texas, the average successful capital campaign is $3.5 million. I have people coming to me all the time wanting to talk to me about their $15 million project, but they haven't ever done any homework and they don't understand that the reality of that. So organizations can often initiate a campaign without assessing whether the project is realistic. So we really work hard to make sure that every project, by the time we're kicking it off, we know we have good confidence it's going to be attractive to potential donors, that internal operations and buy-in from the organization is there, that we're implementing it at the right time of the year. We're making sure there's no other conflicting campaigns that could help us or could hurt us in this effort. We want to make sure that we are establishing a true need. That's a big one, especially with foundations and grant giving agencies. You have to be able to prove want versus need, as well as the amount of money to be raised. As I mentioned, sometimes we can have some big eyes with money signs filled in them and thinking that we can realistically raise a whole lot of money when we can't. And so the reality, just because it sounds great to you doesn't mean everyone else will wrap their arms around it. So you have to adequately assess whether this will be worthwhile. You also need to determine if you have the ability to raise the funds. How to avoid this? Seek advice. The best way to understand what your donors are thinking, to understand if your donors would give to a project and how much, is ask them. It's that simple. And it's interesting, because I find that a lot of people they're intimidated and they don't want to just go out and just ask, hey, if we did this project, would you be interested in it? You're not necessarily asking them for money. You're just asking for their advice. There's an old adage, you ask for money, you get advice, and sometimes I think that can be flipped. So you need to assess yourself, conduct an internal assessment to ensure that you have the necessary foundation and capacity. What I mean there is, with nonprofit organizations, and we all know this, everybody on this call understands, we wear multiple hats and busy. And, the workload of a typical nonprofit employee is just outrageous when you compare it to the typical workload of your average American worker. It's a lot of work that goes into it. It's because we're running on shoestring budgets and running small shops. And so you really need to look, sit down and think, hey, if we're going to implement this, do I have 20 to 40 hours a month on top of this to, and also the necessary foundation, the fundraising infrastructure that I need within my organization to manage the project of this magnitude. This is the best time to sit back and just get real with yourself and say, hey, could this really happen? So some prerequisites for success. We think that these are the top seven prerequisites for success for any campaign that you're going to go out after. So the first one is the nonprofit must have a positive image. Although you do start internally, at some point it will be external, and you will need to gain the support of the community. If you do not have a positive image in your community, it's going to be very hard to do that. The need for this project must be well articulated. Again, you have to be effective in communicating need over want. A lot of times we have people say, well, we need this because we don't like the color of the walls. Well, that's not good enough. You really need to have a good reason for why you're trying to do this project. With respect to housing, I think that oftentimes that can be a lot easier, especially with affordable housing, with good statistics that you have, and then also through needs assessments that you all do as well within your community. So the organization must have identified and nurtured positive relationships. This attaches to number one, but it goes a little bit deeper in the fact that you need to have a positive image, but you have to have good relationships. That's all fundraising is relationships. It's in my mind, it's nothing more. If you can develop good relationships, you are going to enhance your ability to raise major gifts. So you must attract strong volunteer leadership. And so what that means is that you need to have people who are willing to be on your board, who are willing to be on any established committees or be a part of your organization in any way, who are passionate about your organization and willing to put in some work and provide that human capital that I talked about earlier, but put forth an effort. The philanthropic environment timing must be right. I touched on this earlier, but what I mean by that is you really need to look at, are you doing this campaign during the right time? And so there's some elements that play into that. I think you really need to think about, are there other capital campaigns? In most cities, including large metro areas, if you have four or more capital campaigns going on at any one moment in time, I would say that your market is saturated and it may not be a good time for you, because regardless of how big or small your community is, it's typically the usual suspects that are being approached and asked for money. And so, that can affect that. So campaign must be well organized and adequately staffed. And by staffed, I mean by paid staff, by hired consultants, and by volunteers as well. The board of directors must have a sufficient number of members who are influential in the community. And so again, this attaches to four. You can see how these weave together. But your board needs to have a good reputation in the community and have some bit of an influence so they can get with the movers and shakers in your community and make the project happen and make it successful. So before committing to any campaign, it's important to conduct an assessment. And so there's two levels of assessment that I think need to be conducted: internal readiness, external assessment. This is touching on some things that I talked about earlier. But internally, you need to look at yourself and be honest with yourself and say, hey, staffing-wise, do we have the staff that is competent enough to take on a project like this, that has the time to take on a project like this? Is our board, are they strong enough? Are they influential in the community? Are they going to jump in? Are they going to buy into this effort and be a part of it? What is their capacity? What are their strengths, weaknesses? You need to look at your organizational structure. You know, we work with organizations that are as small as they have an executive director and maybe one operations staff, all the way to organizations that have over 150 employees. Both of them have their same, have very similar levels of problems sometimes. And sometimes the one with the most employees can be the most troublesome, as we all could probably agree with. But you really need to look at your organizational structure and understand if you think you have the right structure and the right people in place to make a project like this happen. Constituent communication. You need to look at how you're communicating with your constituents. And by constituents, I mean volunteers, anybody who has a linkage to your organization, donors. Are you maintaining effective communication with them? Do they understand who you are? Have you educated them enough? Do they respect you? Do they trust you? Your technological capabilities in this day and age is a big thing to assess. So you need to understand, are you able to house all the data, all the programs that you may need, the systems that you might need to adequately track the progress of your campaign? Or do you have that available to you? Your development history. We have a lot of people that have approached us that don't have a strong fundraising background. And that just, as I mentioned earlier, fundraising is about relationships. The key to a successful campaign outside of grant funding, it's going to be based on individuals. And the best place to start is with people who have already given to your organization, who you have a linkage to. And so when you don't have a whole lot of that, you're going to have to build that. I'm not saying it's not doable, but it may take a little bit longer. It may be tougher. Looking at your key policy and procedures, do you have good, solid policies and procedures in place that were not done back in 1975? That are recently updated and that are valid for today. You need to really look at those. And then you also need to assess, are they realistic and do we actually follow them? And if we don't, are we willing to start? Because that is a big thing with a campaign, is to have good policies in place and procedures in place to guide you. Because trust me, you will run into roadblocks and you will want to have something that will guide you through that. The best place to start is to have good, solid policies and procedures. External assessment. This is looking out. Again, clarify the public perception of your organization and of the project. Refine the project objectives. Make sure that you're effective in communicating and people truly understand, hey, we're not doing this project just because we want to. This is a true need in our community, and it's an opportunity for them to make their community a better place. Do you have the network of potential donors and volunteers? Determining a reasonable and attainable goal. Again, like I said, the best way to determine how much someone is going to give to a campaign is to ask. And then establish a realistic time frame and determine, you know, is the timing right in our community? Is the economy there? Are there other projects going on? Is it good for us? Are we ready to go? And so a lot of ways so this is typically where we will start. And the way that we assess internal and external readiness is through what we call a feasibility study. And the feasibility study is the opportunity to come in and really assess the project, go out and engage your donors and say, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. Here's some details. What do you think? Is this something you would support? Do you think it's right? Do you know of any other projects that may be conflicting with this? Do you think the timing's right? Do you think we communicate well in this? And so we also run, we do extensive internal assessments as well, just to ensure that the organization we're working with is campaign ready. So effective planning, the elements of an effective campaign effort. So when we do a capital campaign, there's four primary phases. I've already explained some of them. We'll reiterate though. Phase one is planning and preparation. Phase two, silent. Phase three is the public phase. And then phase four is the project wrap. So let's go into a little bit of detail on that. So phase one, planning and preparation. So during this is when we go through and we test feasibility. We engage donors. We don't ask them for money. We just ask them if they're interested. What this does, though, is that helps plant the seed. So when we do implement and we go back to them, we're not hitting them upside the head and they're surprised by us coming to them asking for a lot of money. We've already talked about it. They're ready to go. And it makes that makes campaign implementation a lot. It optimizes that effort. So during this phase, all applicable policies, procedures are established. We establish the campaign management structure. Committees are established. We term this as the optimization stage because there's little to no results in terms of monies that are raised during this time. However, if you can't tell, I'm passionate about making sure that you have good, solid strategies and plans in place. This is the most crucial stage because it establishes the foundation of your campaign success. Phase two, silent phase. So this is that internal, inside-out, top-down approach that I've talked about already with you all. This is when we go through and we solicit gifts from the family. As I mentioned, we always go to the board first and we say, hey, ante up, because if you're not able to do it, then we can't go out and ask anybody else to. So this is a time that we start engaging foundations as well, corporations and also state and federal agencies. We may, if the timing's right, as we engage them, if they advise us that it's okay to go ahead and put in a proposal, we do. A lot of times they tell us, hey, wait till you've raised at least 40%, 50%, 70%. We want to be the last money in. But we do start having these conversations. But the silent phase, the thing about the silent phase, it's very quiet. It's very personal. It's as simple as having coffee. It's intimate. It's a lot of one-on-one conversations, not big events, not real external type approaches. The third phase is the public phase, and so once 70% of the campaign goal has been pledged, that's when we say, okay, it's all right. Get your megaphone out and let's tell the world, because by then we have the momentum that we need to say, hey, you know, we're on our way. Be a part of this and finish this out. You know, you don't want to miss out on this. And so the public phase, that's the very external. You shift from that individualized, intimate approach to very public facing approach. You engage all media platforms, social media, TV, news. This is where we'll have events. We'll, you know, really try to engage the masses to help us finish this project out. This is also a phase I mentioned earlier. A lot of foundations want to be last money in. This is when we go and hit them and say, hey, we're ready. Let's do this. And we bring in those capstone funds for the project. Phase four, project wrap. This is just as important a phase as any of them. This is the cleanup phase. This is where we're getting the final dollars in, capping the project off. Once 100% of the campaign goal has been raised, the project's wrapped. We honor the donors, and we celebrate. We have a victory party. But what this is, the reason why this is important is because this sets the stage for you to say, hey, all of the donors that gave to this, thanks. We appreciate that. And it gives you the opportunity to say, you know what, we're not just going to ask you for money for a project and then never talk to you again. This sets the stage for you to say, hey, we're going to maintain a relationship with you, and we're going to keep you updated about the success of our organization. And every time we talk, we're not going to be asking for money. We really want to have a relationship with you. And it begins your stewardship process. That relationship development process of donors, and it sets the stage for future long-term giving. So the campaign planning roadmap. So when we do any kind of a project like this, we will create a campaign plan. Four primary elements in that. We want to have the project overview. This, again, is that communication piece. It ties to what we term the case for support. I'm sure everybody's heard that term, but simply put, the case for support outlines the problem, solution, and impact of your project in an emotional and also in a very and in a statistical data-driven way as well. So we want to outline funding objectives and budgets as well. That way that's clear. Everybody understands what we're trying to raise, what the budget is, what all this money is going for. That way, if anybody ever asks a question, if they don't know, if they have somewhere where they can go to get the answer. We also like to outline very clearly the solicitation process. How are we going to go out and ask for money? As I mentioned earlier, I've explained, we'll go to the board first. Then we'll go to our major donors. Then after that, it's found, you know, we lay out the process, whatever that may be. It's tailored to each organization to fit them appropriately. I'm not sure if anybody's ever heard the term gift chart. I'm sure you have. A gift chart is simply an illustration of how you're going to eat the elephant one bite at a time. And so it takes a large project and it breaks it down into bite-sized chunks. And so, for example, a $1.5 million project, we would say that the top of our gift chart, we need to collect, we need one pledge of $150,000, at least 10%. And then we need two of 100. And then we need four of 50 on down the line. But it shows, it breaks the project down. And then the gift chart can be used as a great tool. I use it all the time when I'm engaging with donors. It's so interesting. You can ask somebody, how much do you think you want to give to a project? And they may have a hard time telling you, but you slide a gift chart around and just ask them the point to where they think they are. I don't understand it, but it works. People point all the time and they will say, I think we're right here. And if it's on the higher end of that gift chart, a lot of times we want to make sure we get the clarification on that, because sometimes that can't happen. So we want to make sure that we have all of our campaign materials and promotion efforts in place. And so within our plan, we will define when we are going out and even in the internal phase, what materials are we going to be using to leave behind with our potential donors in our meetings? How's it going to be produced? Are we going to do something that's very simple, or do we want something well produced? I know some people have very strong opinions on that. They think that you should not heavily produce material because then donors will wonder, well, why should I give you money when you're spending it all on this? But sometimes some campaigns do call for, more aesthetically pleasing documents. So we also want to lay out within our campaign roadmap what our awareness efforts are going to be. How are we going to reach out when the time comes for our for the public phase of the campaign? So, last, giving guidelines and procedures, primarily forms of giving and the procedures. How are we going to accept gifts? What forms are we going to accept gifts in? Are we willing to accept gifts in the form of land, of stocks, of, you know, and then how are we going to approach that if it's given to us in that way? And then as well as campaign guidelines and donor recognition, how are we going to recognize donors when we receive gifts? How are we going to manage our databases and make sure that we effectively administer the program and the campaign effectively? So the last section, roles and responsibilities. I know that we got started late and we are coming up on 1 o'clock. So I know some of y'all are probably in your lunch break. I want to be respectful of your time. So we're going to run through this. Like I said, I'm going to be sending this out later on. But when we do a campaign, there's some specific roles and responsibilities that we put together for different elements and different people within the campaign. But pretty much the overlying roles and responsibilities of all members who are involved in the implementation of a campaign and the implementation of a plan for a campaign, their requirement should include all of these bullet points, starting with make the campaign their philanthropic priority, give a gift, commit their pledges at the beginning of the campaign, all the way down to assisting with individual cultivation and helping along soliciting key prospects as needed. Board of directors. So the primary role the board of directors play, they are a critical force behind the campaign efforts. It starts with giving. The board will help lead the fundraising effort by giving generously in proportion to their ability. I love to set a lofty goal for the board when we start a campaign. Typically, we'll set our realistic goal and then we'll set our stretch goal. And 9 times out of 10, it's so awesome. The board will step up and we'll reach our stretch goal. And that just does wonders for a campaign, because the stretch goals, oftentimes, you know, people see it and they'll be like, yeah, right, that's not happening. But then it does, and they are on fire and ready to make this happen. And so it sets the pace for the campaign. We ask that the board is active. And so what that means is that they participate actively in the solicitation of gifts. And that doesn't mean going out and asking for money necessarily. It could. It could mean giving, providing introductions, writing thank you letters. You know, there's other ways to solicit funds besides going out and asking for money. Champion the effort. We ask that the board will stand behind the effort 100% being ambassador. If that number is anything less than 100%, you need to seriously take a step back and say, should we be doing this campaign? 100% is essential, because if you don't have that, that 1% it'll catch up with you, and it won't be good for your campaign. As I mentioned, with every campaign, the first thing we do, we create a campaign committee. So it's commissioned by and accountable to the board of directors. And this committee is the group of people who assume the primary responsibilities of all matters pertaining to the campaign. So primary purpose is to assist the staff and consultants in soliciting and identifying donors, and to implement the activities outlined in the campaign plan. Ideal members, they're going to be those who possess the ability, creative energy, and socioeconomic clout to garnish major gifts, simply put. Also, it includes people who have connections with people who are affluent and also who have influence as well. It can be comprised of board members as necessary, organization friends and family. You know, by that, I mean people who have a connection to your organization, staff, volunteers. I also like to encourage trying to get some people who are external who may have a potential interest in what your organization does, but has never really been involved in terms of being a volunteer or donor. Great way to get them involved, but then also get them to be a part of the success of your campaign. And lastly, I like to typically try to identify some business leaders and other influential community members who can connect to people who you may not necessarily already have a connection to, but who could really help make your campaign successful. The campaign chair, we always assign a campaign chair to spearhead the efforts of the campaign committee. And so essentially what the campaign chair does, coordinates the committee activities, executes the plan, and really plays an influential role in evaluating, assigning, and soliciting prospective donors. And the key part is acting as the campaign spokesperson. So in conjunction with executive director and other key staff, the campaign chair is the public spokesperson for the campaign. This is the person who will make statements in the media and urge participation. We also like to assign an honorary campaign chairperson. So what that person is, it's just someone who has a great reputation within your community. And I think if you think of your hometown or the community you live in now, you can think of that one person that everybody just loves, everybody respects. When he talks, people listen. We'd like to have somebody like that, because it could provide linkages and it could get attention directed towards your organization that otherwise would not be. The key expectation simply for honorary chair is not much. We just ask that we can use his or her name on all our campaign materials, and then they attend the campaign committee meetings whenever possible. Executive director and key staff, as I mentioned, there's a lot of work that goes into a campaign on the staff side, anticipation of 10 to 20 hours per month on a typical campaign. And so typically what this is that the four primary elements of that being the chief fundraiser. So this is to work alongside the committee, work along consultants, and attending solicitation meetings and making requests. providing general support. So what that means is to prepare informational materials for donor meetings, utilize the donor database to identify potential donors, to analyze, to assess, to determine who we think that we want to go out and ask money, ask to donate to our effort. And oversee campaign administration. This means to implement the established policies and procedures that we have in place. It's the role of the executive director and key staff to do this, to manage the donor database and to keep record. And so additional is to work in conjunction with the campaign committee chair. And as I mentioned, you know, the committee chair is the face of the organization, but I think that can run also with the staff, to be a part of that, to be that key spokesperson as well for the campaign. So in conclusion, key takeaways to consider when attempting your next special project. First and foremost, take your time and plan. Establish the foundation first. Now, I need to tell you this. When I get an idea, I'm the type of person, I'm so passionate. And if I don't catch myself, a lot of times I can be in that position of ready, shoot, aim. We don't want to do that. Take your time and plan. I promise you, you'll appreciate that when you get down the road. Another key point on that too is all plans, when you start implementing, typically will get blown up. So the key is to stay persistent and continuously evolve. And so I like to follow a 4-phase process. I call it, it's assess, plan, implement, evolve. And you continuously do that. Assess where you're at, replan, implement that, and then evolve. Start it all over again. So ensure reality. That's often done through a feasibility assessment, internal, external assessment. Ensure that you're realistic in your approach. Identify your human capital and assign the roles that fit. Make sure they understand exactly what their role is going to be in the project. Again, start inward and work your way outward. It's a backwards approach. And then lastly, have fun and make the campaign a wildly successful endeavor for you and your organization. So again, I'm Scott Caldwell. My company is Caldwell Business Group. I would love to hear from anybody. If you have any questions, if you're a lot like me, I'm gonna end this webinar and then I'm gonna think of a million things I probably should have said or something I should have asked. Don't hesitate to reach out. That is all my contact information and how you can reach us and learn more about Caldwell Business Group. Again, like I said, I will be sharing this slide deck. I'm gonna be sending it out to Michael and Sarah and they're gonna be getting it out to you. And so I hope that you found this insightful, and I hope that it gives you something that you can take today and implement and make your organization wildly successful. Thanks again, everybody, for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. We really appreciate you bearing with us as we work through some technical difficulties, and thanks to the panel, the participants as well for working out, helping hang on while we work through those. Like Scott said, we will get the slide deck out to you as well as a recording of this webinar, and we'll get that out to all registrants. And if there are other people in your organization that want to watch this, then they can as well. And thanks again for everybody's time. And Scott, we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.